Previously on 24.
That's how you see Penethor.
You will experience a pain I can't even describe. At 8 cc's, I run the risk of inducing heart attack. 4 cc's!
And that's 8 cc's total, Jack. His vitals are spiking across the line.
4 cc's!
The connection you found between Dad and Gradenko had to do with a contract that was awarded to us.
What did an ex-Russian general have to do with the contract?
It was his job to release the old nukes into the U.S. for decommissioning.
He knows you didn't tell him everything.
And I won't. You know I won't, Dad.
I have to be sure.
I would like you to appear on television and appeal to members of Islamic communities everywhere to come forward with any information regarding Fayed. I certainly can't reach out to them for help, but I know you can.
Fayed has already called me a traitor, and many others will follow him if there is even a suspicion that I am an American puppet.
Not a puppet, a partner, at least when it comes to finding these nuclear weapons.
The president just rejected every one of my proposals.
The change in leadership is imperative to ensure this nation's security. I'm not talking about holding hearings. Something more immediate would have to happen.
This is the engineer.
You've got the wrong man.
You're going to modify this so that I can use it to reprogram the bombs. You will do it. The question is how much pain will be inflicted on you before you comply.
Stop! Oh, do it.
Arm it. Very good.
Fayed's already gone.
The reprogramming device that Fayed had me built for him. If it's not here, it means he took it with him. And with it, he can activate the other bombs he has anytime he wants.
The following takes place between 2 p.m. and 3 p.m.
Okay, hi. I'm Eric Balfour, and I play Milo.
I'm Scott Powell. I'm the editor of this episode and one of three editors on the series.
And we're sitting here on Friday the 13th doing this commentary, which is kind of cool.
I think so.
So I was just saying before we started this that really, we don't really serve... Oh, there's my name. That's so fun. That really, we don't always... The only purpose we serve as actors is to facilitate you guys doing your jobs. That's what I think.
Well...
would you... Come on.
No, it's all about the acting. It's the casting is the most important thing, I think. I mean, the writing and the casting.
Which is interesting, because I would say that it's so much an editor's and director's medium. There's Rade. You know, I just did a movie with him last summer.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we did this movie called The Elder Son.
The Gradenko?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he's so wonderful. He's an amazing actor.
Oh, he is.
He was Boris the Blade. It doesn't get much cooler.
Right. No, he's a scary presence. He's such a great addition to this.
You got to see this movie we did, because he plays the sweetest man in the world, and he's adorable.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's such a, like, totally different than anything else he's done.
Yeah, like Adani is the sweetest man in the world.
He is really
so
sweet.
So mild-mannered, sweet guy, and look what he is here. That's great.
I was really bummed when I saw him killed.
Good. You can use the time you have to reprogram your targeting
software. It was a pretty exciting... Well, that hasn't happened yet, so... If people are watching this for the first time...
Hopefully they're not watching it for the first time with the commentary on.
Yeah, hopefully not. Okay, so we can... Anything goes, huh? Cool.
James Morrison, yoga instructor to the stars.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like... You know, in real life, he looks like a yoga instructor. He has that kind of, like, post-hippie...
Right, but as Bill Buchanan, not at all.
No, not at all.
That's the last thing you could picture him doing is yoga.
You'll notice that I love putting my hand on my face.
Well, it works well for you.
One of my favorite things to do. You'll always see me putting my hand on my face or rubbing my forehead or on the back of my head.
Just a touch of... Is it a little bit of insecurity when you're, I mean, not as an actor, but what you're playing here?
I think I do it. I do it to. I hate when people look stiff, and in real life, you know, you scratch yourself, you itch, you have tics, and I feel like actors either, you know, they either don't realize they have them and they do them incessantly, Like if you ever see, you know, people who blink too much on camera, or they lose them all because they're so affected by them that they no longer become human.
Yeah, you know, you've got some great little mannerisms that are very natural that work well.
Poor Carlo. He had to keep having that makeup done over and over and over again for the rest of the year.
This is a great episode for he and for Mary Lynn.
I just want to talk to him.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Give us 10 minutes.
He was great.
Mary Lynn is...
I love that look she gives. It's like she smelled somebody who just farted.
Right, or just tasted something really funky.
Oh, this was the first time Jack was back in CTU?
Yep, this is his first time back.
It's really funny. If you've ever been on the set when Kiefer's on set,
yeah,
it's so different. We're all when he's not on set, we're all jumping around and goofing around and making jokes and being goofballs. Kiefer shows up, everyone gets really
serious. It's down
to
business. Yeah,
it's down to business.
Your father's company was contracted.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Dispose of the nukes Grenko was to hand over.
My brother Graham oversaw those contracts, not my father.
He still might have some information.
Oh, Chloe. Where is he? Coming up is this really sweet moment between Mary Lynn and Kiefer. I love this moment. What she says to him is just a Chloe thing to say, but there's so much heart behind it. Here it is.
Thank you for saving Morse's life.
Yeah.
I'm really glad Fayette didn't kill you this morning.
I have to talk to my father. I just want to thank you for everything.
It's nice. And is that the first time that those two have gotten together this season?
Yeah, that was the first time.
Yeah, this is the first time he's seen her.
That was the first time.
Cromwell. Dude, he actually looks more like your dad than Kiefer's.
Yeah, he does. I think he has more of my nose.
Well, just tall... You know, yeah. Thin.
He's a cool dude.
I didn't meet him.
Oh,
I
he's really he was really fun to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
He's got so much, you know, just experience and knowledge behind him.
Oh yeah.
And he played the role really well. I thought it was really interesting what he did.
Really well, but yeah. Physically, it's hard to believe that he's the father of Graham and Jack. But
well, you know, most people don't know how much. I think you might have just given it away how much taller he is than Kiefer and his brother.
Oh yeah, huge. What is he? Because
I think as
six,
far as
seven
I think
or something,
he's I don't know if he's that tall, but he's 6'4", maybe 6'3", 6'4". You know, as far as most of the fans are concerned, I'm sure they think Jack is 6'5", 6'6".
Right.
How tall is Kiefer? What is he?
He's 5'8".
10, 5'8"? 5'8"?
Yeah. I know, because he and I are eye to eye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever your brother may have done, he didn't deserve this. I didn't mean for this to happen.
One thing about this episode, it's very different from other 24, is there are a lot of scenes with two people only talking. Well written, very well acted, but... a much slower pace than we're used to. You know, it's going to kick into gear a little later. You know, I actually like that about it.
Well, these episodes are great for us as actors because, you know, the scenes with six people in it, you know, you spend all day shooting them.
Yeah.
One 2-page scene, you'll spend all day shooting because there's six people in it and you're, you know...
It's more of a coordination.
Coverage on every single person and... You just want to kill yourself at the end because you've been saying the same dialogue for 12 hours.
Right.
I had virtually no involvement. Graham oversaw...
That's the personality of our show, though. You know, six people starting at one end of CTU, walking to another, you know, going from six people to two people. Then it's between three people and constantly evolving. Makes it a challenge to edit, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, it must be really tough for continuity, too. I mean, that must be one of the big... I think I have to sneeze. Hang on. No, I'm okay.
He's taking the death of his father.
Continuity. Bless you.
I did. That was me sneezing. The Santa Anas are really kicking around here. Peace. I think that's going to be one of the best parts of the DVD commentary.
The sneeze?
Balfour sneezing.
Well, let's see if I can get a good burp or something out.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe Graham shared something that I wasn't privy to. Thank you.
these scenes between Morris and Chloe are really good.
This scene was awesome.
Yeah.
You can go in now.
Actually, I stole that from another scene. There are two scenes that are a lot the same, and I took out the dialogue in this scene between the nurse and Mary Lynn. And to do that, I had to steal it from a piece of another scene.
You were tortured. You held out as long as you could.
I think Carlo's awesome.
He is. He's a great guy, too.
Oh, he's such a super great guy.
His parents...
They're so sweet.
His parents were here, and I showed them a scene. It's not this scene. I should bring this story up again when we're on the scene. I'm going to hold this story till the next Carlo and Chloe scene. But they're adorable people, huh?
Yeah. Carlo just... I'm amazed at the little idiosyncrasies he brings to all the scenes that he does. He does always does something interesting that I wouldn't have thought of. And
uh-huh.
Just go down.
That was kind of a nice soap opera moment there for him, though.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. He turned twice.
Uh-huh.
That was hot. I definitely have to bust his balls for that.
Yes, Mr. Bauer.
We've got a problem. Grudenko's here.
It's a lurch. Yes, Mr. Bauer.
Yeah, right?
Oh, Mr. Adams.
Before they do. If Grudenko implicates me, everything.
Every once in a while, there's a guy. I'm like, how did they cast this guy? Who is not paying attention that day when some thug? It's always some thug.
Yeah, some bad guy.
It's always some bad guy. You're like, why him? I think it's because it's always ends up being some stunt guy. They're like, we need somebody to say this line.
Yeah.
And then some stunt guy, and you're like, can somebody remove that pole from his ass before he says the dialogue?
Yeah, we've had our share of goofy thugs.
He said he'd make some inquiries, but I think it's a dead end. He doesn't know anything.
The news from here isn't much better. But Milo managed to trace the fragment he pulled off Fayed's computer to a local IP network. It confirms Grudenko is definitely here in L.A. I've got my people monitoring chatter, data mining interagency backlogs on Grudenko's activities prior to going underground.
Every time I see James having to do any of this dialogue, all I can think about is his sides, his actual the script pages, taped to a computer desk.
Oh, nice.
Or on somebody's chest.
Uh-huh.
And he does the weirdest thing. Instead of just taking the pages out of the script and, like, cutting them into the little dialogue pieces and taping them somewhere, because it's usually too much information to try to put in anyone's brain, he writes them out on these little blue cards. He writes them all out, and then he has each card. And then, like, for whatever scene, he'll put one there and put one there. I'm like, why don't you just cut it out of the script and just stick it? He's like, I don't know, I got to write it or something.
Well, that's probably part of his memory thing. He's got to write it to memorize it.
Maybe, that could be. He still reads it. We all do.
Yeah.
Whenever you see us behind a computer and we're spouting something into the computer, we're not really looking at anything information on the computer. We're just reading the dialogue.
Yeah, but what about when you're doing walk and talks and you got three or four pages to do?
Then you actually have to do your job. Well, no, you carry a folder. That's when you carry a folder with you with information that you're reading, and you have the dialogue
right.
in the folder.
Man, you guys disguise that well.
I was standing over him. And I looked up and I saw my father in the doorway. And then everything just stopped.
Does Kiefer do that too?
No.
No.
I ordered Agent Burke to shut down the IV. He did. I thought we got it in time.
Not only that, you guys revise your dialogue almost every time you rehearse, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, almost always.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not on purpose. It's just as you play the characters, you build your own rhythm of the character and how you speak and how you say it. And so, you know, we would start to see it throughout the season that, you know, that would creep into the actual scripts. You'd start to see ways that we actually talked creeping into the characters through the dialogue. But, you know, it's not always that easy. So you end up kind of making it your own. to a certain degree. And sometimes that's applicable and sometimes it's not. It depends on the scene, you know. Like, if it's, you know, the script supervisor or somebody will sometimes say, like, this needs to be this way for this reason. And right. Then you go, oh, okay, that makes sense.
I killed my brother.
But you guys rewrite it, and then we rewrite it again, you know. We'll rearrange the dialogue, and we'll remove, maybe a clunky word or a phrase.
Well, you guys are our angels and devils all at the same time, because we rely on you to make us look good and not, you know, cut out those horrible, you know, moments when we overdo something or don't do anything.
Hopefully you're angels. I mean, when we look good, we look good.
Yeah, but we're always the first ones to criticize you guys, you know. Oh, why'd they cut out that pause?
Yeah.
That was the best moment. It was my favorite moment, man. That long 30-second pause where I just stare.
Right.
It was so good. You know, you're like, you think it's so important, and everyone's sitting around going, yeah, well, that's 30 seconds of commercial time that we're not selling.
Right. This show, we do let breathe quite a bit. I mean, there are times when it's going 100 miles an hour and there's not even a breath between the words. But when we slow down and do something emotional, we do let it, I mean...
Do you find it difficult to have to... Because, you know, sometimes, like, you do sort of have to reconstruct scenes, you know, because of, you know, dialogue or moments or things. So what may have been a specific timing of how two characters interact, you guys have to sometimes recreate that even though it's not there. So that must be
Well,
difficult.
Sometimes we have to create silent beats where they weren't there.
Right.
And vice versa. Commonly. And a lot of times during a scene, especially on this show, since it's real time and things are happening at the same time, you guys will play out a whole long dialogue scene, and then I'll dissect it and intercut it with a whole another situation. Maybe you right. guys at CTU are working on something, and at the same time, Jack is in the field working on something else.
Right.
And we're, you know, we've shuffled the deck, you know, and we can play some of it in boxes, but, you know, we got to do that fairly sparsely.
Right. You know, I'm really pissed. I never got to meet Powers Booth.
Oh, really?
The whole time here. Well, they were always in the White House
right.
side, and we were over here.
Yeah, your schedules were totally different.
He's badass.
Oh, man, he's badass.
But I firmly believe that our best...
He squints really well, too.
Yeah.
The way he squints. Do it. Do it right there. Come right. on. Come on. Give me another one. Yeah, what's up?
Uh-huh. You hope to obtain that by letting a known terrorist leader address the world on American airwaves.
He's got these quirky rhythms, too. He takes these pauses at odd yeah. times, and it sort of makes it that much more unsettling, his performance.
How scary would he have been in a movie like My Own Private Idaho?
Oh, yeah.
As like a older, gay, like, guy who loves young boys.
Right.
He'd be really creepy in something like that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I think I might have to write something for him like that. Like, kind of like a dirty old pedophile. Sorry, Powers. I don't know why I see you. He's just so sinister.
Yeah.
And the but way he was awesome in Red Dawn.
I don't think I saw Red Dawn.
You never saw Red Dawn?
No.
Oh, my God. Red Dawn was, it was like C. Thomas Howell. Was Ralph Macchio in that as a kid? Was he one of the kids? I think he was. Patrick Swayze. And basically the Russians and I feel like it was the Cubans. At the time, came over and they took over America. They basically took over the western portion of the United States. And these kids had to try to fight to get them back. And he was a pilot who got shot down. And he became like the leader of the Wolverines, is what they called themselves. It was awesome. Everybody wanted to be a Wolverine. I mean, all my friends.
I'll have to rent that.
Yeah, man. It was awesome 80s, like, right. It's like right up there with, like, you know, North Shore and like Rad. That was like a BMX movie. Thrashing.
You were a BMX guy?
I was like a skater, surfer kid.
Around here?
When I was really young, we were up in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
But then, I used to go hang out at Santa Monica Pier with all the breakdancers when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Like Pop and Taco and Turbo and those and the guys from Breaking. I kept trying to convince the guys in my band that I wanted to call the band Turbo and Ozone.
Turbo and Ozone?
Yeah.
That's a good...
I thought so. Yeah. They weren't into it. We went with something else.
What'd you go with?
We ended up deciding the name of the band's going to be Born as Ghosts. It's like, you know, the idea that nothing ever really dies and you're never really born.
This is a current band?
Yeah. Yeah, we're actually getting ready to record our second record.
Great. Let me know when you're doing a gig.
Yeah, definitely.
Love this country will not stand by idly and let that happen.
So I have a great story about Chad Lowe. And I think I have to tell it because it's so good. So a friend of mine, a few months ago or earlier this year, before I had met him, before we started the show, so it was almost a year ago, at least 9 months ago, she goes, I'm driving down the street in Santa Monica, and I see this really cute guy in the car next to me. And he looks at me, and I look at him, and we're flirting as we, like, go to stoplight. And he's, like, cute and blue-eyed and blonde hair, and I don't know, I keep noticing him, and he keeps looking at me, and so eventually he kind of, like, waves to me to, like, pull over. And my friend is, she's very attractive, beautiful, beautiful girl. So she pulls over, and he pulls up behind her and gets out of the car, and he says, you know, hi, my name's Chad Lowe, and, you know, maybe we could go out to dinner sometime or something, da-da-da-da-da. And she didn't realize who he was. And there was this whole dialogue and this whole conversation between them, and I guess he was sort of, you know, trying to ask her out. And she had no idea. And I think this was right around the time when there was a lot of publicity about his, you know, divorce and things like that. It was afterwards. I don't want to incriminate him. He was definitely not involved with anybody at the time when he asked her out in Santa Monica. But I thought it was kind of a cool story. So I walked on the set and, you know, found out he was going to be playing a role in the show. I was like, rad.
Did you call him on that?
No, I didn't have the balls to. Not even a little.
Well, hopefully you'll hear this.
Yeah, you'll hear it here. No, good on him. I think it was awesome because I wouldn't, if she wasn't my friend, I wouldn't have walked up to her. She's way too hot.
That's, yeah.
So it definitely took some moxie. I thought it was awesome.
That is,
to wave a girl over on the, to wave a girl over on the street, pull over and ask her out. I think it's kind of rad.
Yeah, I wish I had the guts to do that.
I'm going to try it she'll probably be less attractive than the girl he did it with. Yeah. I'll try it.
Well, I'm way beyond trying that kind of stuff. I got over that 22 years ago. Yeah,
22 years you've been married?
22nd anniversary in 2 weeks.
I came close to that. I mean, I got engaged, but then I ended that. So, 22 years engaged for 6 months.
Right.
It's pretty.
Got a lot in common there. Yeah.
Where did Peter McNichol go? The first day I met him here, too, I was so excited to meet him, but I don't think he was aware of how excited to meet him I was. So he kind of was like, hey, how you doing? And I was so bummed because I really wanted a moment with Peter McNichol.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't get it. And he really, I don't think he was interested in talking to me. And then the next time I saw him, he came up to me and was like, I'm really sorry I wasn't more attentive when I first met you. I know you were trying to give me a compliment. I'm like, yeah, I love you as an actor. And he's like, no, I totally understand. I'm really sorry. I was like, I wasn't feeling very well that day. I kind of had the flu. And then he talked to me for like 15, 20 minutes. And it was so awesome. I was like all excited.
Yeah.
I ran around.
Yeah, I'm kind of starstruck still. I mean, I've been around famous actors all my life, but actors I really, really admire, you know, and I want to make a good impression on. It's kind of like in elementary school when you got the hots for a chick and you just, you just kind of freeze up.
Luckily you don't hit the famous actors like you did the girls in kindergarten. You know when you liked a girl in kindergarten, you'd kind of hit them or pull their hair?
I'm talking sixth grade, you know, I was...
Yeah, I would
you know,
hit them.
I'd still
hit them or pull their hair. Right. You know, something. I guess if they had training bras at that point, I'd kind of
snap
the bra.
The bra,
yeah. That was pretty good. Peter, I don't know. I'm always fascinated as to who I'm starstruck by because it's not usually the obvious ones. Mm-hmm. Like Peter McNichol to me was like amazing because I just, you know, like he was so awesome in Ghostbusters 2. I don't see why he didn't get it. Well, that should have gotten more recognition in my opinion.
That's right. He was the creepy.
He was
that creepy Russian dude. Yeah.
He is. What was that accent? I can't remember it.
I think it was a Russian type.
Yeah, it was something very strange.
Right.
Here's Rena Sofer. This is like the second time I'd worked with her.
Really?
Yeah. And I'd worked with her husband, who's a director.
She's so good. She's got the most amazing eyes.
Yeah, she is.
Her and Kiefer have some genuine chemistry, it seems. They're really good together.
It's going out a lot at night, and
He said it was work-related, but I didn't believe him. I thought he was having an affair on me, so one night I followed him. It wasn't out of jealousy. It was for leverage, anything I could use against him to get custody of Josh if I left him.
Where did he go?
Gold digger.
To a house in West LA. I went to the window. The blinds were drawn.
Have you seen this episode? Yeah, this aired.
I never actually really got to see it. I don't really. I'll watch them. Like, I'll try to watch the episodes, and then I'll try to, like, you know, watch. Like, I always want to try to see what I've done in episodes, so not to repeat too much of it, or see if it, you know. It's weird because, you know, watching a final cut of something is not necessarily indicative of what you as an actor has done, because there's so many things involved in it. There's, you know, the sound, the lighting, mm-hmm. the camera moves. And so as an actor, you know, watching the final cut, you're not always watching the performance that you may have loved the best or the moment that you loved the best, because there's so many other things involved. Like dailies are actually kind of more fun for me to watch.
Because
mm-hmm. you can watch and go, did I really do what I thought I was intending to do in that moment?
Yeah, or, you can see the whole process.
Yeah.
The whole range.
Whereas sometimes, you know, It's the scope is so big.
Yeah, well, dailies on this show will take you all day.
Yeah,
this is the first show I've ever worked on where I don't sit and watch dailies, because, I mean, for one thing, they shoot the shows in pairs, so on any given day, only half the material might be for my episode. But even without that, they shoot so much that it's better to just start at the top of the scene.
Well, how do you know? Well, how do you know which take to use?
I use my own judgment.
But of, like, when there's that many, like, especially now, like not on this show, but on projects where, like, you know, they're shooting, you know, HD or mm-hmm. digital, you know, and there's not film involved, so they just keep rolling and they don't cut. They just, I mean, how do you find the good takes?
You do just that. You find the good, it's not even the good takes, it's the good pieces of takes. It's the little gems. So what I do
it makes the job so hard for you when there's so much information being thrown at you, that how do you, you know, like,
well, you know, it's a sort of a systematic way of going through the material, you know. It's
right.
It's just, and I start, I'll start at the top of a scene, you know, and I'll have like eight or a dozen choices of how to start a scene. Sometimes I'll find a good one, I cut it in. And then I find a better one, I replace it. You know, I just kind of go through it all. And then I go to this next line of dialogue or the next piece of action and, you know, just find the best piece for...
Because I always worry about it as an actor. Like, if I do five takes of something, you know, that's like my close-up or whatever, and I do the take, at a certain point, I'll worry that if there's been too many, like, wait, take it back, do that again, or, you know, we'll do an end slate, or, you know, they pick it up in the middle of the scene, like... If there's too much like confusion being thrown at the editor, you're like, how are they going to know to be able? How are they going to be able to like find that moment that was the best one with all of this shit in between?
Well, the thing about editing is, unlike cinematography, I mean, you light it, you shoot it, and then you can't really. I mean, you can, but going back and redoing it is a big deal. Editing is extremely flexible, so I can cut in a performance or a piece of a performance, and then. As I'm going through the scene, I'll find another piece. Even though I'm at the end of the scene, I'll happen upon a better performance for this first line. I just replace it.
Right.
Everything is so replaceable and interchangeable and flexible. You know, I try and be very thorough when I first go through the material, but sometimes when I'm done cutting a scene, I'll flash through the stuff again just to make sure I've gotten the best of each piece of performance.
We should go. Bill will be on comm.
Sometimes one take will sustain. You know, I mean, it'll be the best from the beginning, middle, and end. Mostly I'm picking from, you know, I got a piece of take one, a piece of take eight, a piece of, you know, it's all, you know, I'm building the performance.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Have your men find and secure a house in West LA.
Fine. I'll text you with the address.
And don't let it take more than 3 minutes to find and secure that house.
Kick those people out. And... Oh, Oh, yeah. This is the scene that I brought Carlo's parents in to look at.
She knows where Grudenko is. Jack and attack.
Look at the way that bandage wraps around his pectoral muscle. It makes him look like he has like a little teat.
Let's see.
What? Look.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be so pissed at me for saying that.
Yeah.
I get it.
It does. It's awesome.
That looks uncomfortable, too. I mean, he must feel really funny.
Morris, I know you've been through a lot today, but you're really starting to piss me off.
Well, let's add that to my list of failings.
My assistant said to Carlo when his parents were there, "Wow, you take a slap well." And Carlo, very deadpan, said, "My mother taught me that." It was a funny moment. It was very, very good timing.
Stop it. Stop it.
Jack and his team are entering a hostile situation, and they need CTU backup. Yes, I can do it alone. But there'd be less chance of a mistake if you would help. So why don't you stop feeling sorry for yourself and get back to work?
Milo, we just passed 98th Street.
Roger that, Jack. We're maintaining our position 6 blocks behind you.
I can't imagine what you went through in China, Jack.
He puts that freaking thing on his hand every day.
Mm-hmm.
It would drive me nuts.
What about you?
Yep, and when we shoot inserts with his double, we got to dress his hand up, too.
I've been trying not to think about you for over 20 years.
Really, we don't need to talk about this.
It's your father, wasn't it? He drove you away.
Does that poor man's plot process look good?
Yeah, it actually is pretty. It's pretty impressive.
In the military?
For a lot of reasons.
Hopefully you forget about it once you put the sound in and stuff. These close angles are great. The wider angles are a little bit shaky, but this is just a car on a stage with the background projected on screens around it.
Hello?
Marilyn, it's me. Don't say anything. Just listen. I don't want Jack to know I'm on the line, you understand?
Okay.
You're involved in something that's much bigger than you can possibly imagine. So here's the deal. Unless you do exactly what I say, I will hurt Josh. If you don't believe that, you might want to consider this. Graham's death was not an accident. I killed him. I want you to say thank you, Susan.
Now, did Kiefer ever find out that his dad really killed his brother? I should know that, but
I don't remember, actually. That's a good question.
407
Hendry. I don't think so. That's an important piece of information he might want to know.
Yeah.
I guess he's got bigger problems.
You don't. He dies.
9407 Hendry Place. Do the right thing, Marilyn.
I already lost a son today. Don't make me lose a grandson.
Goodbye, Susan.
You all right?
Fine.
Thank you. It's my office. A lot of the roads are still shut because of the bomb.
Can we get home?
No. And no one seems to know when they'll open up again.
And what do we do?
Your kid's a good actor. I forget his name. He's a really nice kid, too.
He's really
professional.
Yeah, he's a great kid. He was on set the other day when I found out. I found out I got this part in a movie that I wanted, and he was so excited for me. He was really sweet.
Marilyn, is any of this familiar?
Yes. Jack.
What? What is that?
Tell him. Come on, tell him. Tell him. Come on, tell him.
It's nothing I thought I could.
Ah. This neighborhood that we shot this in is really crazy.
Is this?
Well, basically, it's over by the airport. Right. And it was designed... The city started buying all the property in the neighborhood so that they could turn it into, like, some kind of security checkpoint area. So there's this whole, like... There's, like, this two-block radius of abandoned houses. They've all been bought back by the city, and they're just abandoned. So, you know, whenever you want to blow a house up or crash a car into a house or destroy a neighborhood, you... I guess everyone's been going down there and just, you know...
That's
doing
great.
Their stunts or doing their explosions. But it's really weird because it's like a demilitarized zone.
She lost the Cold War.
A big ghost town.
Yeah.
It's cool. It was unfortunate for us. Came in very handy.
Works out. Yeah, it works out well for us.
Today we will correct that mistake. And the Arabs will take all the blame.
Roddy always plays Russian dudes, and he's not even Russian.
Really?
No.
That's not his real accent?
No, it is his accent, but he's Yugoslavian, he's Serbian. He's not Russian. He was a very famous soccer player too when he was younger. I always wanted to steal one of those footage of the Fox News alerts of the bomb and like just have it playing at my house at a dinner party one night just to freak people out.
I bet you could get your hands on one.
I
don't know if you could get away with that.
You don't think? I guess everyone's seen this now.
You know, mostly your friends will have seen it, at least.
Yeah. My friends never watch anything that I do.
Really?
No. They're always like, oh, you're on that show? Really? I didn't know. Yeah, it's been like a year, dude.
Yeah. Well, this is the first thing that I've worked on that I actually want people to watch, you know? I've done a lot of TV, you know, movies of the week, different reality shows. Nothing that I want to bother telling people, oh, watch this. You know, I'm really proud of it. This is the first thing.
That's cool, though. It's a great feeling to get to work on something that you're proud of.
Yeah. Absolutely. It makes a huge difference. It's also my first gig that's lasted more than 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Because I'm here 6 years, and my longest gig before here is 6 months or so.
What was the last show you did before you were on this one?
A short-lived series called... The Lot for A&E. It was really a nice series. Lots of potential. Great, you know, comedy drama.
Right.
Half hour. But the network basically screwed it up. You know, it was one of those
things. That's
weird. It's the story of, yeah, isn't that something different? That was the story of my 18-year career before I worked here. Great potential, but
right.
Down the tubes. Too many chefs in the stew.
The pale blue house on the right.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
We've got an address. 9.
It was something different. The POV. A person having their POV in a box.
Yeah.
In the same frame. It's.
It's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it worked out well there.
Okay, so this guy driving this truck that I was in, it was just an adrenaline junkie. So he's trying to tip this thing.
Well, look at Kiefer's car.
I know, Kiefer, I have not...
Marina's scared shitless.
I couldn't understand why they were driving so fast into this alley. Like, I never comprehended what the reason for it was. I was like, aren't we supposed to be trying to be kind of sneaky and stealthy?
Stealth approach, yeah.
Here we are tearing through the alley.
Advise your men. Non-lethal force. We need Gradenko alive.
Jack.
Marilyn, I want you to stay in the tactical van. You'll be safe there.
When we were rehearsing this scene... Kiefer has this thing that he does where he'll place people where he wants them.
Right.
He'll move them and he'll go, no, I need you right here. We were rehearsing the scene and I remember him placing me. It was the first time I'd worked with him again this season. And I remember him just placing me. No, right here, dude. Be right here, dude. I'm like, all right, cool.
He definitely takes charge of the scene.
You know, you do something for 6 years, yeah. You kind of, you know how you want it done.
Let's
go, go.
Go, go! Bomb! Everyone out!
Yeah, see, the house exploded before he even hit the ground. That was one of the best stunts we've ever done. I wish I could stop in slow-mo and freeze on that. They blew the house up twice. The first time, the timing was just right, but all the explosives didn't go off, so it blew out the window. The second time, it was a bigger explosion, so I cut the two together to make the timing right and the giant explosion. This double is great here. He looks exactly like you.
Yeah, no, they did a good job. I was always curious as to how the bad guys could afford a Land Rover. How do they always?
Oh, they're rich. They're rich bad guys, man. They're well funded.
That's green. You can totally see the green screen on that shot. And those sparks. Yeah. I hate those sparks.
Oh, instead of blowing out the tire sparks, you mean?
Yeah.
Get up! Get up! Come on! Move!
When I originally did this scene, I kind of wanted it to be a little, almost more. Awkward. I remember I said a bunch of stuff and kind of made Mila seem a little almost goofier and not quite as
I cut around that stuff. I made it as quick as possible because it had to happen quick, to be real.
Right.
Did I give you a still of that picture?
Yeah,
that
no,
explosion?
It was awesome.
I got to get a better one that when off the final. It's.
I remember we were running, getting ready for that explosion. We were standing by the car, and all you can smell is gasoline everywhere. Just this, they pour gasoline all over the car.
That is such an awesome shot of, you know, if I played the whole dailies, as that car's blowing up behind you guys, Rena's, I think she thinks her hair's on fire.
Yeah, 'cause
she's patting herself out, and she's just flailing.
At one point
and
she thought it was on fire.
Crazy, yeah.
Calling in for EMT.
All right.
There it was. I hope everyone enjoyed our commentary. It was
fun for us. We had a good time.
Yeah. I don't know how insightful it was, but hope it worked out for you guys.